You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Three in a row. With that, welcome to another joyous post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Monday evening, as stated off the top, the Rockets are winners of three consecutive basketball games. After that 1-5 start, they have clearly climbed off the mat. The latest victory, 98-94, against a very quality Indiana Pacers squad in Indianapolis on Monday evening. It was a very ragged game in which both the Rockets and the Pacers were in a three-game and four-night stretch, and early in the season, that's always going to be ugly, especially when you consider the Rockets and the injuries they've had. For example, not having James Harden in the opener of this three- and four-night road stretch, and that requiring veterans like Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony, who did not play especially well on Monday night, to overextend themselves in those first two games. But thankfully, the Rockets, led by James Harden, who had 28 points, 6 assists, 7 of 15 from the field, played 35 minutes in just his second game off the hamstring strain. It was enough for the Rockets to get the win against a very quality Indiana team that entered the game 7-3. The Rockets, after the game, improved to 4-5. Pacers fall to 7-4. But this is a quality playoff team on the road, third game in four nights, and it feels so good if you're the Rockets to get that win. Was it ugly? Yes. But after the way the Rockets started this season defensively, we know what was out there after the 1-5 start, and especially the games in which they looked lifeless against the Clippers and the Blazers. To see them win back-to-back games in which they allowed 94 points, which they did tonight, and 88 points like they did in Chicago on Saturday, and the turnaround after Chris Paul called that players-only timeout late in the first half in Brooklyn on Friday, the defense is showing signs already, and that's before we even get to the looming return of defensive mastermind, assistant coach Jeff Bezdelic. More on that in our third and final segment as we make our way through our 3 points recap. But to lead off, this is a game in which James Harden stole. This, to me, is the key storyline because, as mentioned, Chris Paul, now he did have 13 assists, but 9 points, 4 of 12 from the field, 0 of 6 from 3. It felt like his shot didn't have the usual arc to it. He also had 5 fairly uncharacteristic turnovers. His free throws in the final minute of the game, one of them barely rolled in. The other was a short miss. It felt like it was a 33-year-old veteran, which Chris Paul is, now in year 14 in the NBA, asking him to play again tonight, a game-high 38 minutes, because there's still no Eric Gordon. Even though James Harden is back, let's not act like the Rockets are at full strength. Eric Gordon's still out with leg soreness. So Chris Paul, game-high 38 minutes, and now a three-game and four-night stretch, which began with him shooting 27 times with that 32-11 showing in Brooklyn on Friday night. Yeah, he's a little fatigued. The same can be said for Carmelo Anthony, 3 of 9, 2 of 7 from the field, 8 points, 5 boards in 24 minutes. This is a guy who's 34 years old and is in year 16 in the NBA. They did the heavy lifting on the front end, and at their ages, especially in November, it's kind of ridiculous to expect much more than that. It's the kind of game where James Harden should be a little more fresh. Now, he is still rounding back into form after missing all that time with the hamstring strain, a week and a half. But it's one thing to say on paper it makes sense, because you know what? On paper, the Rockets should have never started 1-5. It's another thing to actually do it. And to see James Harden do it on both ends, 28-6 in the final minute of the game, the Rockets were tied at 90. Harden hit the tie-breaking three, a great feed from Chris Paul. He faked the initial shot, stepped to the right, buried the three with about 35 seconds left to put the Rockets up three. Then after that, with 5 fouls, knowing he couldn't really take a risk because it would foul out, he still poked the ball out away from Victor Oladipo, the all-star on the opposing team, to effectively seal the game. Now, there were, of course, free throws from that point on. It got a little bit hairy when Oladipo made a 3 to cut it to 1 with 20 seconds left. But generally speaking, that Harden 3 and then the poke out of Oladipo with 5 fouls, it takes incredible awareness and body control to do that. And he didn't get lucky with a call. He got all ball. Very aware. And that's the thing about James Harden. Given his offensive workload, it's not really reasonable to expect him to be a dynamic defender at all times. But with his overall hoops IQ, which is as good as it gets, he can be from time to time, especially when the game really matters and he can turn it up. That's what he was late. And of course, he did what an MVP does offensively in terms of hitting the big shot. But when you think MVP, they typically do it on both ends. Well, that's what James Harden did tonight. And the Rockets needed it because, again, a lot of their regulars, we mentioned Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony, the veterans, they weren't quite themselves. PJ Tucker, a guy who's just had an extraordinary minutes workload this year, one of the only Rockets that hasn't missed a game, he played 33 minutes, 9 points. Actually did. Now, even though PJ started the game 2 of 8, he made his final three a big one. The Pacers had tied it with just under a minute and a half left on an Oladipo shot before Tucker hit that corner three, swished it, no doubt about it. Again, it was a game in which you could see PJ's mileage, especially over the course of the start to the season, combined with his age. He wasn't necessarily in peak form, but when the Rockets needed him, yeah, he delivered. And that was the theme for the Rockets in this game. Generally speaking, they weren't at their best. It was a slugfest. The bench guys in particular, which has carried them through certain stretches of this year, they didn't seem to have it, but Harden found a way to pull them through. Also, Clint Capella, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 8 of 10 from the field in 35 minutes. It's kind of been an underrated storyline between Nene's injury, the inconsistency, I should say, in youth of Isaiah Hartenstein and Marquise Chris behind Clint Capella. Also, even though Eric Gordon is not a center, at the same time, if Eric Gordon is out, that means you're not able to slide your other players up to maybe sap up some of those remaining center minutes. So we've seen Clint Capella play 35 minutes with regularity this season a year ago, even with his breakout year. He just played 27. Stamina was a question. Well, he answered the bell again, even against an Indiana team with Miles Turner inside that's typically pretty imposing, but Capella 18 and 10, Miles Turner just 7 and 2 in his 23 minutes. Sabonis off the bench did have 17, 8 and 5, so it wasn't like the Pacers were lifeless inside. But generally speaking, both teams, it was a bit of a slugfest. The stars did what the stars do in a game in which, you know, the role players didn't seem to have their legs. We mentioned Harden's 28 and 6. Oladipo for the Pacers, 28 on 11 of 21 shooting, also had 6 boards. But when it mattered in the final minutes, not only did Harden make the big shot offensively, he also had the poke out of Oladipo defensively. And in a game that's not going to go on the highlight reels, at the same time, for me personally, it's pretty memorable because we know what the upside of the Rockets is. We've seen them certainly going back to last year, but shoot, even the Laker game this year, we know what the offensive potential of this team is. That's why even with the struggles of the team to start the year on both ends of the floor, you've heard a lot more about the defensive struggles than the offensive, primarily because there's a lot of trust that the offense, led by James Harden and Chris Paul, is eventually going to turn it around. The question has been, especially because in the James Harden era in Houston, the defensive performance has been more tenuous. Last year was the only year that they were really a top 10, borderline top 5 unit on that side. Can they retain that even after losing Ariza and Bamute? Now, thankfully, they haven't lost Jeff Bezdelic any longer. More on that in a few moments. But the point is, to start this season, you've seen more focus on the defensive end than the offensive because the offense is going to come around. And yeah, that's exactly what's happened. Well, that's why to see a grinded out game like this, 98-94, followed by the 96-88 win in Chicago on Saturday night, it makes me feel pretty good. Because if the question for the James Harden and Chris Paul-led Rockets is the offensive end of the floor, I think we all feel pretty good that it's eventually going to be answered. A lot of this is sample size. Again, the Rockets have had a lot of injuries, suspensions. They're now in the middle of a 3-game and 4-night stretch on the road. All of that stuff can take a toll on your energy, your legs, your ability to shoot from deep. The Rockets 15 of 47, below 32% from three, so they didn't seem to have their normal legs in this one. What you wonder about is the mentality, the commitment they had to grind it out like a year ago. And I'd say really for 2.5 games now on this road trip, they seem to be finding that again. They made the big stops, limiting the Pacers to just 39 points in the second half. They actually out-rebounded a pretty big Indiana team, 40-39, even with the Rockets and all their tired legs. To me, these are really encouraging signs. The Rockets collectively, their mentality, their effort, their heart, their will to win, all of those things seem much better than they did less than a week ago. Imagine that, when they were 1-5, what a difference a week can make on that front. But beyond that, when it comes close, when it's winning time, when a game can go either way, that's the kind of game that an MVP over the balance of an NBA season, even on the road, even in a tough stretch in the schedule, even without Eric Gordon, that's what the MVP should do for you. And welcome back, James Harden. That's exactly what he did on Monday night. Rockets 98-94 winners, improving now to 4-5 on the year, bouncing back from that dreadful 1-5 start. Now, jumping back into the program, it's tough to say much about this game other than James Harden and Clint Capella were great. Harden with 28-6, Capella 18-10. Your veterans, Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony, were tired. A combined 7 of 21 from the field. You can also add in P.J. Tucker, who was 3 of 9, although he did have the big three. And generally speaking, the Rockets ground out a game that's not going to go on the highlight reels other than maybe a couple of the big shots in the last couple of minutes. However, sometimes you learn more about players and a team when things aren't going well as opposed to when they are. Everyone can say and do the right things when they're feeling good about themselves, when the ball is just floating through the net the way it did for Carmelo Anthony on Friday night, for example, when he had 28 points on 9 of 12 shooting in Brooklyn. One of the things that really impressed me with the Rockets collectively and some of the role players, especially the new ones, because they haven't gotten enough due this year, they've taken a lot of a beating because, of course, the Rockets off to a slower start. And when things change, of course, folks are going to blame the new parts, even if it's not fair. The injuries to James Harden, the suspension to Chris Paul, all of that played a big role. Now the injury to Eric Gordon. But look, I understand that when you go from a 65-win juggernaut, a hamstring away from the title, to starting 1-5, it's natural to look at anything that's different and put a lot of blame on that. I get it. But tonight, I really like the mentality of Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis in particular. Carmelo tonight, I mentioned earlier, 3 of 9 from the field, 8 points in 24 minutes. On paper, that's not going to look like a banner night for him. But not all points are created equally. Of the 8 points, all came in the second half, where he played 16 minutes. He played just 8 minutes in the first half, had 0 points, looked fairly listless. In the second half, came back with 8, played 16 minutes, and by the way, was a plus 3. So even though most of the other bench guys, for example, Hartenstein was minus 7, Gerald Green was minus 6, Carmelo Anthony still had a positive plus minus, which showed you he was a difference maker on the floor. But even when he didn't seem to have his usual lift, his usual burst, and that's going to happen from time to time with a 34-year-old in year 16, especially on night 3 of a 4-game stretch on the road, he still found a way to contribute. He was active on the glass. He hustled defensively. And he hit what, in my opinion, was arguably the biggest shot of the game, or up there alongside Harden's in the final minute. The Rockets were down 81-75 with under 8 minutes left in this basketball game. Now, I know both teams are on a 3-game and 4-night stretch and everything was a little ragged. But generally speaking, in a situation like that, it's the home team that's going to have the fresher legs. The Rockets started fast in this game. They got off to a 19-10 start. Everything was easy early on. They were hitting threes from distance. Harden crossed up Oladipo and made him look silly. All the things seemed to be going well, and then it was like they hit a brick wall. And I think fatigue had a lot to do with it. And it would have been very easy to say, a margin that continued to grow, down 6 from their 8 to go, this isn't our night. Well, the Rockets punched back in a big way, and Carmelo Anthony, after not doing anything in the first half, he didn't accept it wasn't his night. He kept hustling, and even though he didn't really shoot that many times, he still made a positive difference and ended up making one of the biggest shots of the game, tying it at 81 after the Rockets were down 6 just about a minute earlier with 7 to go, and it looked like a game in which was trending towards the Indiana Pacers. Then, with the Rockets up 1 with about 3 minutes left, the first time in a long time, I think maybe since the first quarter, that they led by multiple possessions was when Chris Paul set up James Ennis a great dribble penetration towards the basket, found Ennis in the corner, who splashed the three. Ennis ended up with 13 points, made 5 of 7 from the field, 3 of 4 from behind the arc, and maybe what made me feel best about Ennis tonight, he played 27 minutes. Now, yeah, it's great that he returned in less than 2 weeks, one of the quickest recoveries I've ever seen from a grade 2 hamstring strain, but he played just 17 and 19 minutes. I think clearly they had those minutes capped. Monday, they tried to extend him a little bit more, 27 minutes, and some of it by necessity, because Eric Gordon's out and Michael Carter-Williams has been terrible. Well, Ennis played 27 minutes, and he continued to deliver in the fourth quarter. He also didn't really get into extreme foul trouble, which is another step in the right direction. Generally speaking, he hit the big shots. He was active. His stroke continues to look very, very pure and confident. By the way, it's a small sample, but in 5 games, Ennis is now shooting 45% from behind the arc this year, which is phenomenal, and that's a big part of why the Rockets have been so bullish on him replacing Trevor Ariza since signing him in July. It was a rough start with the injury and the freedom of movement emphasis getting him into foul trouble, and there's some adjustment to a new team going on too. But for Ennis, again, a grade 2 hamstring injury, that's more severe than Harden. You shouldn't sweep that under the rug, especially coming back in less than 2 weeks. That is incredibly quickly. It was far from a given that he'd be able to successfully play 3 games in 4 nights coming off of that injury, which is about as nagging as it gets or potentially can be. And so to see him play 27 minutes as efficiently as he did, 13 points, 5 of 7 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3, now he's shooting 60% behind the arc in his last four games, it's hard not to feel very encouraged about him physically and also how he's fitting in. And this is why the Rockets urge patience. By the way, actually, I didn't do him justice. He's 6 of 9, very nice, in just the last two games, Saturday in Chicago and Monday in Indiana. But this is why the Rockets urged patience with James Ennis. They were not throwing him in the lot of Michael Carter-Williams as a newcomer that was a lottery ticket. No, this was a guy who they believed for months could give them much of what Trevor Ariza gave them. I think for a confluence of factors, adjusting to a new team, the freedom of movement emphasis, and then the hamstring injury, it was a slower start than anticipated, but in this game, when it was in the open court, he was able to make plays in transition, and when it was in the half court, he was a solid defender, and he also spaced the floor well and made the Pacers pay when they helped off of him. So, again, it's a little thing, but I don't think that many of you are nervous about the guys returning from last year. And Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein, while Clark did struggle tonight, 1 of 6 from the field. Generally speaking, Clark and Hartenstein, they've given you quality minutes. They've looked at least sound defensively. And with the weaknesses, look, they're rookies. We understand that. And probably when we get to playoff time, I'd be a little bit surprised. Maybe one of them overachieves, you never know. But I'd be a little bit surprised if Gary Clark or Isaiah Hartenstein are playing major playoff rotation minutes this year. In terms of guys that could play playoff rotation minutes for a team that should get back to where they were a year ago, what you worry about, at least on some level, are the newcomers, because you haven't been to war with them before. Well, in the first game that kind of truly went down to the wire, I would say since James Harden's return, now of course they had the Laker game early on and the Clipper game, but it felt like that was a different team, and then especially when you factor in the injuries and suspensions that were at play then. But in this version of the Rockets that we've had since James Harden's return, and really ever since that 1-5 start, this is the first game that felt like was truly a 50-50 game in the last 3 minutes. Of course, you felt pretty good down the stretch about what James Harden, Chris Paul, and PJ Tucker could do for you, and Clint Capela. We've seen that before. The question you wonder about, Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis, your newcomers, what are they going to bring you? Well, again, it's a small sample size, and just as the 1-5 start wasn't indicative of the Rockets, you can't take this 3-game winning streak as fully indicative either. There's still a lot more data points to come, but for one night, I think you have to feel pretty good about what you saw from those guys. And in my opinion, amongst your rotation players tonight, those are your variables that you probably wonder the most about moving forward. Now, to close out this podcast, the recap of a 98-94 win over the Pacers, the third consecutive win for the Rockets, improving them to 4-5 on the year, bouncing back from that dreadful 1-5 start. They've won both games since the return of James Harden, who was the clear and far away storyline. 28 points, 6 assists, 3 steals, a dagger 3, and a crucial steal in the final 40 seconds of that game. I'm actually going to spend the final segment of the show turning my attention to something that didn't happen on the floor tonight, but could have easily had an impact, and that's the agreement reached between the Rockets and former, now once again current, assistant coach Jeff Bezdelic. Coming out of retirement, according to reports today, Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle had it first, then Adrian Wojnarowski later on confirmed it. Jeff Bezdelic reaching a deal, the veteran assistant coach, Rockets defensive mastermind. Of course, he retired unexpectedly just before training camp in September. Well, now he's out of retirement. He's coming back, not officially with the team yet. It'll take toward the end of November before he gets his family affairs in order and officially returns on a daily basis, but he will be communicating with the team in the short term. And to me, it's a big deal, but it's a big deal for slightly different reasons than it's made out to be on Twitter. Now, first off, we have seen 2.5 consecutive games now of quality defense for the Rockets. In this era of so much scoring around the NBA, again, the Rockets now have now allowed 94 points and 88 points in their last two games, both on the road. They also went through a 25-game stretch against the Brooklyn Nets, a 25-minute stretch, excuse me, against the Nets, in which they allowed just 45 points, which is also well below 100 in terms of the pace. So we've seen 2.5 games now of solid, consistent defense for the Rockets. So as I said leading off the year, it wasn't all about personnel. It wasn't all about schemes. It was a confluence of factors, complacency, the hangover effect from being so close a year ago, starting from scratch, integrating new pieces, then the injuries, suspensions, having a shortened rotation. Even if you don't think of James Harden and Eric Gordon, for example, as being defensively dynamic players, just their rotation impact, having to overextend guys and, you know, start Carmelo Anthony, for example, at the three as opposed to his preferred role as the four or five, what they designed him as, replacing Ryan Anderson, then yeah, there's going to be a trickle-down effect, even if the individual isn't that dynamic of a defender. And then, of course, losing James Ennis, the one guy they brought in to clearly replace Trevor Ariza after losing both Ariza and Bamute, all of those things were a big factor in the Rockets' defensive performance, and as they've started to get bodies back, and as they've started to see some results go their way, you're seeing both physically and mentally the results turn around. You're seeing them, the body language, everything look a lot healthier. So in terms of getting Jeff Bezdelic back, and according to Mark Berman of Fox 26, owner Tillman Fertitta led the way in terms of convincing Bezdelic to come out of retirement and striking that deal, and that's great to see that an owner is that committed to the team's success. You better believe that will resonate in the locker room. It's not so much that I see it as a transformative acquisition by itself, because I think Roy Rogers, who's been leading the defense since Bezdelic retired, Roy Rogers is pretty good. The issues with the Rockets are not so much tactical X's and O's. It's injuries, suspensions, it's the integration of new pieces, it's the hangover effect, it's things spiraling after that 1-5 start, all the things we've talked about here at Locked On Rockets for the past couple of weeks. It's not one factor. I think sort of making Bezdelic's return, you know, it's kind of funny seeing some Rockets fans on Twitter make it out to be the second coming of, you know, Michael Jordan coming out of retirement or something like that. And I get, you know, we're all having fun and we want to enjoy when something quality, and definitely at a bare minimum, even if he's not an X's and O's mastermind, look, Jeff Bezdelic is a really sharp basketball guy, and even if we agree that Roy Rogers is as well, just because you have one doesn't mean you can't have more than that. The more smart basketball minds you get on that Rockets bench and in the locker room and working on a daily basis, the better. And Jeff Bezdelic does have more experience than Roy Rogers, so it's possible that maybe in terms of in-game adjustments, having seen a lot more, been around a lot more years, you might see a quicker turnaround in terms of instituting certain schemes than what Roy Rogers would do. That said, the Rockets aren't trying to reinvent the wheel. They're running a very similar scheme, or at least attempting to what they did a year ago. And so while Jeff Bezdelic is the architect of that switching defense, I don't believe he's the only guy that can coach it. And so I don't think there's going to be a transformative effect once he starts interacting with the team, once he returns to the sidelines, to where it's going to make all that significant of a difference in terms of the product you see on the floor. While I enjoy him being back too, I did laugh a little bit at the tweets that made it seem like, you know, the Rockets had traded for Jimmy Butler. I don't think it's going to be anything that drastically changes the team like that. The good news is that it doesn't have to. We're already seeing signs of a turnaround, as we discussed in the first two segments of the show, and really, as we've seen throughout, we're really two and a half of this three-game winning streak that the Rockets are on right now. We've seen plenty of quality sides defensively already. So while Bezdelic will help, I don't think it's necessarily essential. I don't think they were desperate or in an awful place if he didn't. And I think to some degree, the impact is overplayed. In terms of the slow start, I think it has a lot more to do with, you know, replacing the talent and experience of Ariza and Bamute and integrating new pieces like James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony. I think the hangover effect is real. The injuries, suspensions, those didn't help. It's a confluence of factors rather than any one thing. And I think, you know, celebrating Bezdelic's return is because a lot of people wanted to blame one thing. And so Bezdelic leaving was one of the things that people clung to try and make it seem a little simpler than it actually was. The reality is lots of little things that all hit at the same time. With all that said, I'm stoked about Jeff Bezdelic's return too, just for a different reason. As I said leading off, and I've said for a few days now, the concern for the Rockets is the spiraling effect. On paper, assuming health, everything is going to be fine. This team is too good. This team has the pieces that before the season started had us all believing it was a contender. All that has not changed, assuming they're healthy. The only reason it would change, and we saw this at the end of that homestand in which they finished 1-5, would be if mental health becomes an issue, to where emotion outweighs logic. We heard Chris Paul in that Hunter Atkins story that we referred to last week in the Chronicle. The money quote was, man, we need to see what it feels like to win. In other words, we need to see something go right. And at some point, if it doesn't, emotion can outweigh logic. And all of a sudden, players can play beneath their potential, either individually or collectively, to where the results don't match what it should be on paper. That's the great fear. And that's what, even with James Harden out, was starting to happen at the end of that last homestand, and who knows, maybe going on the road was for the best. But in the big picture, getting Bezdelic back, it's one of those little things that I think can really boost that locker room psychologically and serve as a shot in the arm. Because to some degree, even if we all agree that blaming everything on Ariza, Mbamute, and Bezdelic's departures and chalking it all up to that rather than going through the nuance of all the things going wrong, even if we agree that all of that is overblown, at some point, there can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. If that narrative is beaten into submission, at some point, you can see players in that locker room thinking that it's about what's not there. Whereas now, well, first, you're bringing back a guy that's beloved. They love playing for Jeff Bezdelic. I mean, he's the architect of that defense. He's what brought them to that next level. But beyond that, you really cut off that narrative at the pass. Even if it wasn't fully accurate, there can be a self-fulfilling prophecy to it, to where if things start going wrong, even if that's not really the original cause of it, then, no, we've seen this throughout sports history. You can see teams buy into it and use it as an excuse to finger point. Well, now, that's gone. And more than the excuse being gone, it's quite a statement. Not just the GM, but all the way up with the Rockets, it's a winning organization. As Matt Moore said on our show last week, the CEO, all the way up to the owner in Tillman Fertitta. If, for whatever reason, you don't think you have the resources to win at a high level, well, they will go in and get you those resources, even if the owner has to make that pitch himself. That's what Tillman Fertitta did. And to me, that psychological boost, that shot in the arm, that's the real takeaway here. Because rather than any wondering, players thinking, well, would it be different if we had what we had a year ago in terms of the coaching, the personnel, whatever? Well, the Rockets aren't allowing that. Now, they may still need another personnel upgrade, but that's easier to add at the deadline via buyouts, whatever it may be, if they need another wing defender, than it is to add an assistant coach. To add an assistant coach during the season, it has to be someone that's very familiar with your scheme. It's not like you can just hire someone off the street and expect immediate results if they haven't been through training camp and the battles with you before. So it has to be, to make a coaching change mid-season, there's a very limited circumstance as to which it can work. This is one of those. And to bring back the guy that was so instrumental to what they did a year ago, yeah, it's a big deal. I don't think he's going to reinvent the wheel. I don't think you're going to see any transformative effect in terms of the X's and O's and what the Rockets are doing defensively, although certainly I think a guy that's a legend in terms of his defensive acumen, it can't hurt having around the young players, Gary Clark, Isaiah Hartenstein, in their kind of formative development years, having Bezdelic around them every day, that can't hurt. But generally speaking, do I think it radically changes the outlook when he gets back, when he starts communicating with the team, when he starts making adjustments during games? Not really. But big picture, I think it means a lot, because one of the big examples where I could see that spiraling effect that we discussed so much was the angle of self-fulfilling prophecy. If some of these narratives, even if they aren't the reality, eventually the players start finger-pointing and buying into them, and instead, not only have you cut that off at the pass, you've actually given players yet another reason to buy into this organization, not just in terms of each other, but all the way up to, you know, obviously the coaching staff, but the GM, the CEO, the owner, that shared linear vision from the top down. And to me, that makes it all the easier for the players to focus on doing their jobs, to be the best version of themselves that they can be 100% every game. And if that happens, if they're not somehow distracted or feeling down, if they're doing what they are capable of doing, then this team is going to be just fine, because they're the exact same team we thought they were 3 weeks ago. It's just about their mental health. Are they in the right place? And to me, bringing Jeff Bezdelic back, that is the biggest impact. It continues them. They're already on this path, winning two consecutive games over the weekend, now three straight Monday night's win. But you add Jeff Bezdelic, and now I feel better than ever that they are, in fact, on that right track mentally and getting back to where we thought they were before this season started and that rocky 1-5 start. So, on that positive note, that's where we will leave things. As always, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. If you want more content before our next show, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Besides Twitter, we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. There's also a website, LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Always, you can access our prior content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much whatever we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being, don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, if you haven't subscribed to us already, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Megaphone, Google Play. Odds are, wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us because we're part of a great network of local experts, the Locked On Podcast Network, local experts across the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, and college sports. So if you subscribe to us, you can find us wherever you listen because of that network. Subscribe to us, leave us a five-star review. That's how you get episodes right when they come out, even before I post it on Twitter. And if you leave that five-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you haven't checked out our sister show here in Houston, that's Locked On Texans. The Texans red hot, the story of the NFL right now. They've won six in a row, coming off Sunday's dramatic 19-17 win in Denver. Locked On Texans, hosted by my friends Robert Land and Brian Patterson. They've got you covered. You can find Locked On Texans the same places that you find Locked On Rockets. You can listen to coverage of them if it's an off day for the Rockets, which actually it will be for a couple of days now. The Rockets don't play again until Thursday night in Oklahoma City, I believe, a nationally televised game. So if you want to catch up on the Texans or anything else over the next two nights, well, you'll have the opportunity. Anyway, until next time, this is where we'll leave off. Once again, the very happy final from Indianapolis, Rockets 98, Pacers 94. Rockets have won three games in a row and have fully climbed off the mat after that 1-5 start, nearly leveling the record now at 4-5 through nine games. Next game is Thursday night against the Thunder in Oklahoma City. It's a tough stretch for the Rockets, which makes this win all the more important, by the way. Thunder, Spurs, Pacers again on Sunday. That's night two of a back-to-back. Then at Denver, Warriors. These next five games are not going to be easy, so that's why if there's one that's there for the taking, yeah, you need to make sure and you take that swing game, because these other teams that you're about to play over the next five, they're fully capable. If it's their night and you're having an off night like tonight, it might not be there for you to steal in the late minutes the way James Harden did tonight. So be thankful when they can do it. Rockets still certainly not in peak form. Hopefully they get Eric Gordon back soon. I think the extra 2 days rest will help for him with his sore leg, and especially for the veterans. I don't know of any injury with Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony, but after a three-game and four-night stretch at 33 and 34 years old in year four and year 16, there's a little bit of fatigue there. But the good news, again, the Rockets, us as fans, we can all take a couple days to catch our breath, hit the recharge button, and then get back at it on Thursday. So for tonight, again, happy final 98-94 Rockets. They improved to 4-5 on the year. On that note, have a good night and come back soon and check us out right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.